What a gorgeous day. Just nice, warm, but not too hot. I guess I scared everybody away with perception.
At homework,
oh my God. Satya's voice. Namo tassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Sadhu. So, did you do your homework? Did anybody do it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. What was it?
Was looking at the four different ages, four different times of a movement, anything you're doing, your life. First one is birth. For example, if you were going to take a big moment, you take the Buddha's life. The time he was born is one kind of movement. Then when he awakened is the second movement. Then when he started teaching is the third movement. And then when he dies is the fourth movement. So each of them is like an age or a time. And in any endeavor, large or small, there are those four different phases. And if you can actually identify which phase something is going through, sometimes you have a lot of difficulty with something. If you can actually identify which phase it's in, or what phase you're in because it's happening, or something like that, it gives you a better sense of how to adjust yourself to pick up, to learn the wisdom of that. Because each of them has a different quality of wisdom, or a talent, or a movement that comes from it. So, anybody want to tell me all about it? You?
Me?
Yeah.
I was thinking that I was in the last phase of my life, and I thought, maybe I'm just depressed. Maybe I've been depressed. And now, just now, hearing you talk about it, I think maybe I'm in the... Because it feels like I'm between two. So maybe I'm actually entering the third between the second and the third, that I've been in the sort of adolescence all this time, even though I'm almost 50, and that I'm in the mature part of my life, entering
where you start giving back to society.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rather than, I don't think it's the end. I don't feel like it's a closing down completely, but it does feel like a transition.
A transition. Each one of them is a transition. Yeah, and did you all do it with your life, or did you do it with some event? Or, for example, say a creative project like art or writing or singing or anything. There'll be you'll be good at maybe beginning it all the time, or maybe having begun it, moved it to a certain point where you have a great sense of the absolute spectacular nature of your creation. You're wowed by it. Or you get to the point where you actually move it out to society and other people have something to say about it. Or you can let it go and you enjoy watching things dissolve because that leaves an openness. I didn't explain it very well last time, did I? Are you getting a better sense of it now? Some of you got it the first time. So it isn't necessarily just your life, but those are the four different movements that are always happening. So to be able to identify in some aspect, you know, whether, you know, one phase of a relationship, for example, is at its last, something is letting go, something is finishing with that. and you allow that to occur, and so that then the birthing again will be a different phase. Does that make sense? But if you don't recognize the phase, you can be caught by how the one that you do the best and how you think it should be. Whereas if you start to actually look at things in terms of phases, like some things give birth really well, but they don't quite go through the other ones. So to appreciate that and know, yeah, this was a beginning, but it's not quite out of the womb yet. This is just a pregnancy. It's not a birth. It's a new beginning, but it hasn't really come to the point of starting. Or what is starting, not what I thought was starting, but something else is starting. Do you want to tell me what happened with yours? What?
Well, I was looking at it in relation to others, because that's what I understood you to say.
Yeah.
So I was just trying to, you know, watch and listen to people in different age groups, although I don't think I saw anyone, you know, in the birth moment. I mean, I guess I was thinking of more of ages.
Right, because so, it does apply in terms of ages, too.
And so I was trying to see how different people react or interact with different events. And
that's a good way to do it.
Their wisdom at their age.
Right.
What it brings to it.
Right.
So I...
Because that was more what I said, too. Mm. Yeah.
And I think I was a little bit scattered. I didn't, you know, I thought about how people reacted, but I guess I didn't spend enough time thinking about it to really explain what I saw. Although, at certain ages, people seem to have much more to draw from, like, you know, different people.
Mm-hmm.
Like my mother. So she's had all of this time, and so she knows different things.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are a lot of things that she doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because she hasn't been a different generation.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of how I was trying to figure it out.
Did it give you a different way to listen to people or hear people?
Mm-hmm.
And was that...
Yes, I was trying to pay a lot of attention, you know, which, I mean, I do anyway, but it was more... thinking about what,
yeah,
like an analysis
more
so than normal.
Yeah.
So it was interesting.
Good. Who else? You're all sort of concentrated over here.
What came to mind was me with exercise. Lots of births, lots of bringing it not quite to maturity, skipping the giving back and dissolving. It's other areas I did also. Lots of beginnings.
Lots of beginnings. Yeah.
Right.
It's nice to see that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. That it's, yeah.
Yeah.
To be able to use that as a context.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Who else?
Well, mine was with regard to my work life. It's in an ending phase in one of the jobs that I was doing. And so there's lots of closure, lots of going through old files and really putting that, you know, to rest. It's like a burial. I mean, literally putting stuff in bankers, but, you know, it's going away in storages. And then in my own life, I see myself at that place where, you know, am I handing off the torch for other people to be doing what I was doing? Am I wanting to change my profession at this point to do something different? So there's a birth idea there, but it's whether or not I've got the energy to do anything different. Truly, you know,
mm-hmm.
at this point in my life. So,
mm-hmm.
so it's an interesting mix, and I feel like in my life it's always been that. It's like I was, you know, it's like I went into a mothering phase when I was still a child, and it, you know, it's like it's been, it hasn't been in any kind of logical chronology in terms of my literal life. So,
mm-hmm.
so I finally do really feel my age, though. You know, and I feel like the things that are happening in my life are age appropriate. You know, like they're, that's, you know, so, yeah. So, yeah, and it was just fleeting. It wasn't hard to, I didn't find it particularly hard to do the exercise. You know, because it feels like it's, at this point in my life, it feels like it's there all the time.
Right.
You know, that.
Anyone else?
I didn't do the exercise because I didn't know it. But just hearing this, I kind of relate to what Chris says. But the problem is I keep having births without even getting to the dissolution phase. So I feel like there's several different processes going along at the same time that haven't really gotten to the point where they can mature and then go on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's fascinating. It's fascinating. I think it's fascinating.
If you, in order for something to end, do you have to, if you go through that giving back phase, I want to say, like, with a whole heart, and just you're there for that phase of it, does it help it get to
disillusion? Yeah. The more conscious you can be in each one of the phases, the easier it will be. Because you appreciate what is going on. You don't find yourself wishing it should have been like it was or it should be like it could be. You know, so you actually have the power to focus with what is occurring and open yourself to learn that. And in any one day, we go through all four phases over 1,000 things, doing the dishes.
Or not.
You know, or not. Yeah.
End.
Yeah.
And so it's not like I do one and finish it and go on to the next. But it's interesting, now that you're talking about that, it's interesting to notice how that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a very organic kind of process. It's not something that you can, you know, okay, now this has started and everything else is, you know. Like several of them will be going, and the more detail you pay, the more detail you know, the more you see it. Yeah.
And these phases happen regardless of whether we're conscious of them or not. And
yeah.
Rather, we're better at some of them. We might be better at births, but then the rest will still go on.
Yeah.
We just will miss the opportunity.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Or we don't like them. We don't feel comfortable in them. But all four of them are necessary.
Can you talk a little more about the second phase?
Second phase is basically when, if I was going to use it in terms of biology, you could say when sexual maturity happens. You know, when. Yeah, when there is a real sense of self and what I'm going to do. You know? It's like, now I am.
So for a project, say,
Birthing is the idea, and then when you can see how it can manifest, you can understand how it could work in the world. And then next stage is like harvesting. It's reaping it, you know. Okay, this is what I, you know, shit, come on, let's all have a feast here. This is the measurement of time. This is the measurement of all time. It's these four states. They are allied in the Native American tradition with the four directions. In many religions, in many mythologies, they're allied with the four directions. So birth is the east, where the sun rises. Maturity is the south. Manifesting, like autumn, you know, the west. And then north, the dissolution. So they're very it is the beginning of the sense of time. How something manifests in space. It is the relative progress through the form realm, progress through the relative world. So if you actually have a sense of that working in yourself, you can honor the season that it is, without letting your conditioning or your sense of what you should be doing negate the experience of time. Because we're very good at ideals, don't you think? Aren't we, most of us, pretty good at ideals? We all know either what we should be doing or what somebody else should have done, don't we? Mm-hmm. We're pretty good at that. But to think of it in terms of you don't know what you should be doing, or you don't know what that other person should have done, because you have to pay attention to what time point they're at, what part of the flow of the seasons they're experiencing in this particular aspect of their lives or this particular aspect. And that's why, you know, meditation, that quote I gave you from His Holiness the Dalai Lama, gazing at a dull-colored object, make a strong determination to maintain your concentration. So this is a dull object. That is to say, something that doesn't catch your attention, but you can use for focus. So it's sort of like a mirror for your mind. There's nothing that's going to excite you and give you brand new ideas or anything. You've just got a place to set the mind. And then what you're going to do is you're going to, as he says, focus your attention on your own perception and experiences. You become aware of your own perceptions and the experiences that arise with them. And you just watch them. So that you begin to understand what is perception, what is passion. You're caught, a lot of times people tell me that they really get bothered by something and they just can't seem to drop it. Anybody in this room ever had that experience? One or two. Oh, good. So what you're talking about is perception. And if you actually just note the perception, it will go through those four phases. That is the naturally occurring rhythm. But if your mind keeps going back and grabbing, it can't do that. Does that make sense? This is a beautiful quote, isn't it? Gazing at a dull-colored object, make a strong determination to maintain your concentration and focus your attention on your own perception and experiences. On your own. You know, I mean, I can't tell you how many years, you know, I was taught by my beloved teacher, Ananda Bodhi, that you should just develop your concentration and hold your mind steady, you know, and that's called samatha, and that's what you do. So I was always trying for something. I knew that samatha was something that I wasn't experiencing because it had to be something just beyond what I was experiencing, right? I told you already that when I heard about awareness being a power, I kept thinking, yeah, a power for what? And even when I wrote about how in Buddhism the most profound state of ignorance that we are in is the ignorance of becoming, I still didn't get it. It took me years and years and years and one major depression. So I didn't have the energy for becoming, power for what, for perception of how. Just shut up, let go, quit trying to find the end of the string, and just perceive perception. Because when you can perceive perception, then you've got calm. If there is a perception and you're immediately driven by it, there's no calm. No matter where you are, it's not going to be satisfactory. Do you think that's true? I know it's true. Whereas if you can teach yourself to just watch a perception arise like it's in a mirror, remember me saying it's a dream, this is a dream, teach yourself that what you feel so vital is actually a dream. And think to yourself, I wonder which phase of the dream this is. Is this its arising? Is this its... Now you see why I told you that for your homework. So you can actually be interested in the art of perception rather than be driven by the object of perception. Otherwise, it's no different between me and the stick and the string and the carrot and me donkey. Always trying for it. And it doesn't matter that I change the carrot quite regularly to something else because I got this one in it, you know? It's still always that drive. Because the truth of the world is that you're never satisfied. The truth of the world is it doesn't matter who did what to who. There's always somebody else doing it somewhere else anyway. If not me, then you. If not you, then them. If not them, then those. And satisfactoriness isn't good enough if it doesn't include everybody. I don't think it is. I don't particularly, I mean, I would prefer to be there first. So I could get the best chair, but be by the window where the heavenly peach tree blossoms send their, you know, perfume. But after a while, I would start thinking about you poor slob down there in hell somewhere, you know? I would. And then I'd start wondering if I could just drop a flower down to you. So I'd, like, drop a few. Then I would wonder if you got them. And then I'd... And the same is true of you. If anybody's left out, we're all left out. Isn't that true? So why do I like to pretend that I have enemies or people that don't understand me? I don't think there's anybody who doesn't understand me. It's just that they can't stand themselves. I mean, anybody who looks at me is seeing themselves. None of you have ever had an emotion I haven't had. I don't give a fuck. A flying fuck. How dramatic you are about it. None of us have had an emotion that everybody else hasn't had. Am I perfectly clear on this? So that's not the point. The point is not who's better or who's worse. The point is, can I stop trying for something which I have never been able to get and really try to figure out what's actually happening? Like, really, it's very short, this life. 64. I'm going to be 64 this year. How did this happen?
I don't know.
Me neither. My mother's dead. My father's dead. One sister's dead. My other sister is 2 years away of being the matriarch of the family. We're all just going over the waterfall. And the water starts going faster as you get closer. What have you got room to reach for? Pretty soon you're going to be reaching back. Get ready. Try to figure out what's going on when you're still on the water. Not out there, but here. Is there anything else to do? Not until you know what this is, because if you don't know what this is, you don't know what you're actually seeing. Whether what you're seeing is something from you, or it's actually out there. Do you think that's true? I have a really good projector. Works all the time. How about you? I see one or two of you are very good at it. So why don't I project kindness? Like the, what a good idea. Jesus, you should try that tomorrow. No, today. It's your life, it's my life, it's your heart, it's my heart. How do I want to keep it? Do I want to keep being driven by becoming? Well, I know I'm addicted to it. I told you about the string. Remember the string? You weren't here. There are four guardians that you have to pass to get into the heavenly mansion, the celestial mansion. And the first one is standing on the edge of this earth kind of step. And there's this ocean lapping up against it. And he's continuously trying to make it safe. He's continuously trying to make it safe. He's continuously trying to make it right and safe and figure it all out. But it's not safe. So only if he practices kindness can he get out of that circumstance. The second one has a rosary. And he says the beads one after the other, 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 for eternity. After the other, after the other, after the other, until the string breaks. And he usually freaks out. Because he doesn't know what to do with space. And that's what we do with becoming, right? Our minds get addicted to a sense of progress, don't they? Hey, I love playing solitaire. I mean, talk about becoming. Talk about the idea of progress. Huh? Isn't it just? What's happened? Nothing. Oh, but I won. Sure, what? Do you see that, how your mind goes on an idea? Like you're sitting there, minding your own business, looking out, you see the rose, and you immediately go off. Right? You're gone, aren't you? And you're chasing that idea, aren't you? Aren't you? Have you ever found satisfaction? Has it ever been, okay, now I've done it? Could I just see a show of hands here? How many of you have ever actually accomplished something? It's finished, done, no more problem? You have? What was that?
There have been times where I...
Maybe not.
there wasn't accomplishing something. There was sometimes a calm or a peace.
Peace, and then did it last? Is it
no,
last?
No, of
well, that's
not.
What I'm asking
no,
you.
Of course not.
I'm asking you, was that it forever? Okay, done. Yeah, well, exactly. When I win, it's really good, but then I find myself shuffling again. Don't you?
Absolutely. So far, yes.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that that isn't what you should be doing. I'm saying that why are you driven to do that as if every deal mattered? Because there is that, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot invested, don't we, in our game, whatever it is? Don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Our identity gets tied up in it, doesn't it?
Yes.
But we must be more than that. We must be more than that. More than one simple perception that's based on what we hope because we didn't get it in the past. We must be more than trying to fulfill the past by some image of what we're projecting into the future. We must be more than that. There must be real refuge. There must be real refuge. Because I have felt it, and you have felt it. Maybe not for a long time. Why are we trying to prove the unprovable, fix the unfixable? It's an interesting question. I don't know. It took me so long. It took me so long to quit meditating by trying to actually just be interested. And I had to totally fail before I could do it. I think other options should be made available in your lives. This is me in the third part of my life sharing with you something I have learned. It's not the trying, it's the perception that you want to examine. What is perception? Perceive perception. Isn't that what Dalai Lama is pointing at here? Make a strong determination to maintain your concentration. That is to say, not to get lost in all your plans. That's all. And focus your attention on your own perceptions. So it's like you're using the kasina as a mental mirror. You know, you use a mirror. You don't focus on what you're going to see in the mirror that you're going to get, but you use it to see yourself, right? So here you're using a mental mirror to see your mind, to watch, be interested in your own perceptions and experiences. Just interested. Not in out there, but here. Who is it that is looking? Already you know more. Because if you don't see who's looking, how can you tell what it is that you're looking at, whether it's actually what you're looking at or what you have? Is that part, the principle, the qualities of the eye that is looking? It's called illusion. Because there is cause and effect out there, but in order to see it, you have to know the qualities of the seer. And it's not hard to do. Just means I have to give up solitaire. Damn. For short periods of time. Not forever. Hopefully. Focus your attention on your own perceptions and experiences without allowing yourself to be distracted. With this level of mindfulness, and you know, it gets more and more fun. It's actually quite delicious. Eventually, you will clear away all the conceptual events, all the things you think, because what you think is based on the past. Do you understand that? That obscure the natural state of your mind. Then you'll be able to see the seer. Then you will be able to say, here's my favorite line, ah, that is the luminous nature of mind. Aha! That's the mind that can see. Isn't that lovely? Then you'll be able to say, aha, that is the luminous nature of mind. So do you have any questions? Answers?
Mm-hmm. First class. Did you talk more about?
Yeah, if there is a sense of, say for example, say there is a sense that it's bad to want something. I'm talking very personally from my own childhood, right? It's bad to want something. If there is a strong sense that it's bad to want something, then I will continuously perceive what it is I don't want. And never look at what I want. Right? The passion focuses the perception, and the perception rides the passion. Consciousness, perception, which has no legs, rides winds, passion, which have no eyes. And they always arise together. So if you have a perception that is causing you difficulty, you have the choice of changing the perception or changing the passion. You can say, and other than my view, what else is happening? I wonder how that robin sees things. That's one way. Or you can change the passion, saying, oh, I'm going to pretend I hate this, although I really love cheesecake. Huh? You can find the unwholesome in the wholesome and the wholesome in the unwholesome, or you can change the perception. You need to be able to do this if you want to have any balance in your life, if you don't want to always be like a ping pong ball in your life. And, you know, I'm sorry to be the first one to mention this to you, but life is not trustworthy. I know. It's a shock. Telephone poles can fall. There you go. And who knew? And out of nowhere. And what could you have done? There's nothing, is there? I mean, you can do all kinds of dramas in your mind, but this is what there is. You can't argue about the way things are unless you're really into suffering. What you can do is change your mind about them. And that will probably do more to change them than all your arguing.
May I follow up?
Yeah.
Then logically you would think, well, change the passion to knowing what's going on inside, to getting to the aha, to see the luminous mind.
Yeah, that's really the best, the highest choice. Yeah.
And I have problems. I can think that, but I have problems actually hooking the desire part. part of me that so compulsively just wants to win another game of solitaire.
Yeah.
Into that.
Yeah, it ends. And so this is what we're going to be doing on the retreat. I mean, I have decided that we should have more fun on this retreat. So I brought some goodies. So we're going to play. I'm going to show you how that propensity for interest is always there. And that has to do with perception. Because the perception is that it's better to be becoming than not do anything at all. You know? We have this feeling of something missing. Have you noticed that?
Mm-hmm.
And there is a sense, at least if I'm trying for something, I don't have to feel that. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And there are three main ways to go about it. The one is, it's all your fault that there's something missing. Come on. Let's do this. Come on. It's all your fault. Let's do this. And the other one is, something's missing. Oh, God, I can't stand this feeling. Hi. What are you doing tomorrow? Right? First one's called hate, second one's called greed. And the third one is just start telling stories. Just dull out and just, you know, become a creative writer without paper. Just, like, go for it.
Is that because the third one is bored with the first two?
The third one is basically you don't know whether you should try to get the whole world to change it because you're so pissed off about it. Or try to eat everything because you can't stand the feeling in yourself. You can't decide which one to do. Whether you want to hate what's offered and try to make it better sometimes in your best moments. Or whether you want to hate what the feeling is and try to cover it up with 50,000 other possibilities. You can't decide which one to do.
Well, what if you know that neither one of them?
That's what it, then you're the third type. Then what you do is you start thinking of what else could possibly happen, or well, what about if?
Okay.
See, or you tell a story, or you put off making a decision, or you change the subject, or your mind wanders, or you forget what we were talking about, or those things. Sometimes it's called procrastination. It's basically the great power of delusion. It's like great power of just okay. I don't know what to do, so I'll just make this big cloud here. And maybe nobody will notice me and I can creep away. And when it's safe, which it never is, then I'll make up my mind. So the cloud is usually theories. And you've heard me on this subject so many times, but shall I do it one more time? So one time before my mom died. Did you know I was looking after my mother in Alberta, Karen? Yeah, I was looking after her for quite a while. She was really a character, you know. I don't know if you heard any stories about her. She used to say things like, "Don't put your foot down until your face gathers," and things like that. It's like almost makes sense, you know. And so I used to write them down on a piece of paper, you know, and then I'd say to her, "Boy, you just pull them out of the air, don't you?" And she'd say, "Well, yes, I do, dear." And sometimes, you know, they fit. She always had all these kind of ways of just kind of, you know, like disappearing and then suddenly reappearing again. And she had a lot of prophetic. What happened to what I was telling you?
What
happened to what I was telling you?
It just stopped. Or I was trying to think. I don't know.
Yeah, delusion. I just did this whole little dance around, created this whole other cloud, and like we're off on my mother, and you're going, wait, what were you talking about your mother for? Oh, where's the mother? Yeah?
I thought you were trying to make
quite about the Buddha.
Yeah, exactly. That is the point.
That is the point.
The point is that you don't even notice when delusion has spun a cloud, except suddenly you realize you're nowhere near where you thought you were going.
Right.
And how did we get here anyway?
Yeah.
So in our world, delusion types are usually admired for their intellect because they can hold huge theories together. It's a very good intellect. And when the delusion type has actually turned that from self-grasping to altruism, it becomes the intuitive overview. Because there is this ability to spin this huge, have this huge understanding of how things work in an overview. Does that make sense to you? But what a delusion type is doing most of the time is trying to make themselves safe by spinning something that you can't find them in. Does that make sense? So that I was just spinning this whole thing as if you cared about my mother. Rather than talk about a delusion type, I was enacting one.
Right.
Right.
I thought you were trying to tell me that your mom was a delusion type. Anyway, I got deluded.
So you understand what I'm saying. So it's like this huge mind, actually. And it is exactly a theoretical mind. Like philosophers and physicists and people like that often have this huge view. And some of them can really move it to intuitive overview. But a lot of them get lost in it and don't want to know what the real world is doing. Does that make sense? Like you have an idea and the idea has more power than where you are.
We find out what the real world is doing and we don't really like what we found.
Well, that's what the delusion type is, you know, and the greed type is and the hate type is. They find out what the world is doing and they don't really like it.
Oh.
And so there are three main ways to react. So greed type says, oh, gobble, gobble. Hate type says, oh, fucking shit, this is really wrong. And delusion type says, well, my Aunt Mabel used to have one just like that. Or was it my Uncle Stan? Or was it, have you got any, do you remember any? And only last week was it, where were we? And have you ever been to Boise? No, gone. How are we deluding ourselves into that one? That there is, life is dissatisfactory. It is dissatisfactory. And by reacting to that dissatisfactoriness with the greed, hatred, or delusion does not change the nature of the dissatisfactoriness. By the same token, that same wheel, which is the wheel of dependent origination, which is the wheel of the dissatisfactoriness of existence, turning the other way is the wheel of Dharma. The same place that is the state of suffering is also the state of liberation. But you have to stop trying to get rid of the suffering and be willing to go into the consciousness to say who is looking before it becomes the wheel of liberation. You have to let go of the object and explore the subject. And the only way to do that is with love. There's no other way. So that's the hard part. The hard part is giving up our confirmed feelings that if only I didn't want anything, everything would be all right. Now, who knows how many lifetimes, you know, I've nurtured that one, grown it, just got it just like this time, the perfect orchid. Oh, God, it's beautiful. Perfect. I'm going to wear this all my life. But it's not perfect, and it's not beautiful, and it doesn't bring satisfaction. The number one way you can tell whether your approach to the dissatisfactory nature of life is working is Are you becoming more content? Not more uncaring. Less bothered. More aware. More compassionate to others. That's how you can tell. If you're not, then probably you might want to consider maybe, you know, one time out of every four, not dealing that next solitaire hand, whatever your game may be. And come back and say, okay, who is it that is hungry to play? How can I have a sense of kindness toward that being? Is this interesting to you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Cecily, what if that's where the, you know, it's like, it's almost like sandpaper rubbing against the wrong way.
It's almost like sandpaper, did you say?
It's stuck.
Yeah. So just stop rubbing it. And just practice being present. And then see who it is that wants to rub it. Be aware of the perception that it has to be rubbed. Who it is. We're going to do some really interesting stuff. Are you coming on the retreat? Mm-hmm. Okay. We're going to do some interesting stuff with this. I figured this would be interesting to do. I thought we'd work with the senses. Seeing the senses as deities. Don't you think that's a good idea? Senses as radiant deities. I figure this is a good way to go. That's what they talk about in the Tibetan tradition, you know. Every one of your sense doors is a deity, and it goes out and it goes in. And these are the doors of perception, aren't they? So if you start playing around with the doors, maybe perception would change. There's no maybe, by the way. Last year when I was here, I was talking to you about the stupa, wasn't I? Mm-hmm. I thought I was. And I talked about it being actually symbolic of the 37 requisites to awakening. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. Oh my God, should I do it? No, I was going to say, and what are the 37? But I'm not.
Don't do that.
I'm not going there. And you know, the idea is that there is this at-one-ment, this bodhicitta, this knowledge, this totality understanding that is inherent in all manifestation. And this bodhicitta interacts with the elements. We'll call them that, okay? Earth, water, fire, air, space. And there is some propensities from words given in the past, you know, that all propensities come from having given word. I wish I could be like them, or any of those kinds of words, you know, creates a propensity, and where the circumstances are ripe, are right, that propensity will ripen, and then there is a boundary formed called the sense of self. It's very subtle. It's sometimes called the protective circle. And then within that protective circle, there's these eight graveyards. And each of the graveyards has a tree. The eight graveyards are the eight worldly dharmas. Do you all know what the eight worldly dharmas are? Mm-hmm. You heard this from me so many times, it must be First one has to do with earth, right? So it's gain and loss, right? Because the earth is the demon of hunger, or else the boundless wind of loving kindness, universal wind of loving kindness. And when it's a worldly dharma, it's gain or loss, gain or resentment of gain. Resentment because of not gaining, right? And the second one is satisfactoriness or dissatisfactoriness, happiness or dissatisfactoriness, water, compassion. And the third one is seduction, passion, seduction slash passion, or rejection. Sympathetic joy, fire. And the fourth one is power, influence, or obscurity. Air, equanimity. And those are the eight graveyards that are around. And the fifth element, space, is what the incarnation arises, is it, with the consort of space, right? You and I are in total embrace with the extraordinarily generous consort of space. Aren't we? Mm-hmm. And each of those graveyards has a tree. So they become graveyards, but the tree, when you're no longer seduced by them. And when you're no longer seduced by them, the tree gives up this sap that becomes the nectar that supports you in moving into the stupa and to take your rightful place in the center of the stupa or the celestial mansion, whatever you want to call it. So these eight worldly dharmas are also the winds that consciousness rides. And sometimes you ride the wind and it's sort of still kind of the graveyard is not such a graveyard. It's suddenly developed a whole bunch of beings and you're interreacting with them. And sometimes you ride one of those winds and all of a sudden it will be the sap from the tree rising, you know, sweet maple syrup taking you to the higher realms, you know. And it varies during the day, doesn't it? Sometimes you can feel a sense of kindness, and sometimes you really resent that that person has what you deserve. Right? You got my. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
So like a lot of the first work has to do with learning how to make the graveyards just graveyards, that you can go there, you can move through, you can utilize the tree, but your passion is not in trying to change it. You appreciate it for what it is. You see, that has exactly to do with whether or not you're trying to change life. If you accept life for being what it is and you realize it's in here that you can make the change. Because it's always going to be imperfect. If any of you, however, actually manage to find a way to make life perfect, please let me know. I will be glad to sign over. I will come and follow you. In the meanwhile... My experience is, It isn't that life can be different, it's that I can have a different way of approaching life or being in life. And if we didn't all believe that, why would we be here? So whether we're willing to let go of our desire to stay away from our own fears is a lot of it, right? Isn't it?
Did you say fears?
Yeah, because we all have a fear of being caught by something, right? Don't we? We want to be in control because we're afraid there is no control. Is that true? Mm. Or maybe we're going to be totally unloved or useless, so therefore we've always got to be building things. Is that true? Mm-hmm. You think that's true? I think it's true. It's true of my beloved parents. It's true of my family. It's true of me. It's true of all my friends. I look at my daughter. It's true. My grandson, it's true. Isn't it true? As soon as you got your brain formed by the time you're 3 and you're starting to walk around, you're already doing it, aren't you? Learning about how to get through the graveyards unscathed, aren't you? All of us, we're all doing the same thing. So how then to get into that mansion, into that stupa, get into the throne room, not just get in there, but get right to the damn throne room and sit there and meet yourself. That's where you really are. And that's what the pain is, the feeling of being separated from where you really are. And it isn't going to be satisfied out here. Never. I come here. There is justice.
So that's almost like original sin. That's sort of the same. Being separated from where you really are, being separate, that's really...
But you're never separate. It is your perception that is separate.
I just was thinking of all that.
Yeah, exactly. It is, yeah. And that's basically the same. Although in Buddhism they say, you know, you're already enlightened, you're just not aware of it.
It's a little more positive in some way. Well,
unless I really wanted to beat myself for being stupid, but I agree. Well, yes. I agree with you.
Well,
I agree with you.
Different.
It's possible, at least. Mm-hmm. It's possible. Whereas with original sin, forget it.
Well, yes, yeah.
Because you're originally...
Well, now they're saying, though, that we were supposed to have original sin so we could go in through the process, that it is a process.
Ah.
So it's, they're starting to see the light. Yeah, they're starting to see, well, that, you know, something's got to go on.
Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Discriminating wisdom is not separate from perception. Discriminating wisdom is when you perceive perception and you realize that perception is inherently empty of a fixed identity. Once you understand that, then you can move the winds where you want them to. You're not moving the winds based on your habits, based on your conditioning. Once you understand that perception is inherently empty and you know that where the mind goes, the winds gather, then you can decide where to place the mind and you go where you want to go. It's like tacking on a lake. You're not in danger of capsizing. Now you know how to use the power of your life. Which is why I keep talking about perceived perception. That's what there is to perceive. Perceive your perception. Don't just see something and then totally believe it. Then look at who is it that is perceiving. What is this perception? Does it actually exist outside of my framework? Could that fly see it? Could that cat see it? Could that dog see it? Right? Could that bird see it? You're not negating it, but neither are you making it an absolute. So therefore you got room to play. Got room for creativity. There's one question I'm absolutely surprised you haven't come up with.
Yeah.
How can we tell us?
No.
Our
what is the question?
Perception.
Well,
our mind wanders.
Yeah, you don't have to maintain attention on the perception. If you, like, 3 or 4 times a day when you notice you dislike something, finding something you like in it. You notice when you like something, find something you dislike in it. And as a play. I cannot give you better advice. Teach yourself how flexible your mind is in small ways. And it's so enjoyable to have choices rather than be run by the dictator of your past. Like, when does the past end?
Never. Well, it would seem.
But wouldn't it be wonderful if you could see things for the first time in this moment, without losing the past, but have it as a second opinion?
Right.
You know? Have it as a second opinion. Now, that's why the Dharma books are behind you. They represent everything that has been. They represent all that supports you here, but you're having a new experience. And then you have choices of which, you know, which lines of the book you want to hear, too. Don't you? I notice that we are all here, so therefore there has been more wholesomeness and unwholesomeness support us in our lives. Well, that's a real blow to my self-pity. And I do self-pity so well. But if you were, say, for example, to image your father, whoever he may have been or have been or will be, on your right. Everybody got them? Whatever you thought of him, doesn't matter. Or somebody you prefer to think of as your father. I don't care. On your right. Everybody got that? Hi, Dad. Oh, and there's your mother on your left. Got that? Now, if your father was going to represent himself, would that change who's there?
Mm-hmm.
If your mother was going to represent herself, would that change who's that? If there's a smell that reminds you of your father's clothes or his work, would that change who's that? A smell that you connect to your mother. And behind your father are all his fathers on his right. And all the fathers of those fathers going way back. And on his left and on the left of all those are all the mothers. Your siblings are beside you, and behind them are all the same. Many different pictures of their fathers and their mothers. And on the left, behind your mother, on her right, are her male ancestors. And their male ancestors, going back and back, back and back, many countries, many places. And on the left, all the mothers. And all the animals that have been associated with any of those people are there. And all the plants and all the neighbors. And all the billions of little moments of kindness. All the small little moments and the big ones. this energy of kindness just whispering and holding behind you. And you feel it's not separate from your heart. It's moving through your heart, and in front of you there is this energy moving out all the generations to come. You pass that energy on. All the young people you know. And you send them that river of kindness. Is that interesting? Because not by remembering what we didn't get are we moved to altruism, but remembering what we did. If there was only one kind moment of one of my ancestors, it's by remembering that that moves me to see the value of kindness. Does that make sense to you? And what is important then, I stop trying to make things satisfactory for me. And I have the power then to wish all beings to be happy. And I do wish all beings to be happy. So do you. So do you. Did your mom and your dad change with the different pictures? Were you surprised by any of them?
The pictures with the smells.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Old spice and tender.
Huh?
An interesting combination.
Yeah.
Old spice?
Yeah. Yeah, spice and shiatsu.
Actually, shalimar.
Spice
and shalimar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
If you do that, you know, at first you might, some people might not get many pictures. But if you sort of just keep playing with it and keep letting go of your sense of who they're probably going to be, you'll be surprised. You'll start getting more of a full sense of the being. And then you'll start getting a better sense of the ancestors behind that support you. Because maybe your parents were total absolute shitheads. But behind them somewhere, I mean, here you are. There had to be some power of love. Does that make sense? Maybe they were nice when they were kids. Did you want to say something?
Yeah. It seems like frequently it's the not nice parents that propel us out to look for another answer.
It is, but then how to stop being propelled is the question. Because there's also fear there of what they were. Like, otherwise we would not be propelled from a child, the fear and the sense of not wanting to be in that state again. So I'm talking to about how to not just have the one perception, so that we also have the choice of how to stop